As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to another edition of Copa with Felipe Cardenas. I am your host. Thank you so much for joining me. My guest today is Hercules Gomez. Herc is a two-time MLS Cup winner with the LA Galaxy and Seattle Sounders. He was a Liga MX Golden Boot winner with Puebla and a league champion with Santos Laguna. Herc is also a former national team striker with the United States and a member of the 2010 US World Cup squad. Today, he's an outspoken ESPN and ESPN Deportes broadcaster and analyst. He's also the co-host and co-creator of ESPN's hit show, Football Americas on ESPN+. Herc, welcome to the show. How are you?
Felipe, my man, you took one MLS Cup away from me, man.
Oh, did I? That one, are you three-time?
Three-time. Yeah, too many people know that because back in the day, this was 2002. The rosters were slim and I was 19 years old and like the second youngest guy on the team was like 23 years old, maybe 22, if that, maybe. I think it was Alejandro Moreno. And I always joke when I see Kobe and we talk with them, like my training sessions started when the first teams would finish because there weren't that many players on the team. So it was like the training ended and then it was like, all right, Herc, go cross the ball, go shoot on these goalkeepers. You know, it was like, that's when my session started. So I don't blame you for not knowing that too many people.
Basically, you were like Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo at the 1994 World Cup.
Yeah.
Gets the medal.
Sans the gap in the tooth and the talent.
Exactly. The teenage phenom just waiting for his chance.
Not too many people know that, though. I remember the PK shootout. He's arms in arms there, and you could see him smiling.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that he was just like taken to that World Cup as like, hey, let's get this kid some experience. Let's show
him. And look what happened.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So today's show, we're going to focus a lot on the U.S. men's national team in Mexico as they prepare for their two September friendlies. Like, what do these friendlies mean? What do these call-ups mean? What are the big concerns for both nations? At the end of the show, obviously, I'll have a spot kick with Herc. Five questions. Going to put him on the hot seat for that one. But I want to start with Football Americas. You know, I wrote a story about the origins of the show last summer. I'm a big fan of the show. And, you know, I remember back then part of the story was just like everything that you guys had to get done, everything that you and Sebastian Salazar, your co-host, had to get done just to get noticed, just to get the pitch in front of the right people at ESPN. 2 years removed from just that process, the pitch process, the knocking on the doors, the thank you, but no thank yous. Now it's a legitimate show on ESPN Plus. How satisfied are you with where the show is right now?
We are pleasantly surprised, but not surprised in the sense that this was something that was sorely needed in our space, in this community. A show that's yours. We call it your show, right? That talks about what you're interested in through your lens, the American fan here. So we're pleasantly surprised in that sense. But I'm more surprised in the sense of how it's taken off. I mean, there's talk of a third day in the week that we will now start recording coming the new year. Juan Carlos Osorio, ex-coach of the Mexican national team, will be with us in Qatar.
Get
like,
out.
The show's taken off that much where we have the budget and he sees respectfully that, I guess, the project that we're trying to do and the growth in it, where he's going to come with us to Qatar and he'll be our Mexico analyst.
Wow. So that's what he's up to. That's what he's up to.
That's what he's up to. It's been great, man. I can't tell you how much of a thrill this has been. You know, it started off as something niche and it's grown so much and we're turning a lot of heads internally. And that's not easy to do, especially when you think of it just on the outside looking in. You have two Latino hosts, young, ish, I should say, compared to the rest of our colleagues around that cover sports, cover our sport in general. So it's been cool to see, and they let us be us. Sebi and I have a unique chemistry, if you will. It's very explosive at times, but it's kind of like how a lot of us grew up in our families with our friends, that barroom debate. Everything will be a debate. Everything will be argued. Voices will be raised, but we're still friends at the end of the day. And I think people have taken to that. So it's been cool to see how people have been getting to know us and kind of drawn to us in that sense. And it's been really fun, honestly.
Other than, and this is part of this, this is a quote from the story that I wrote from you. There's a whole new generation of fans who think like us, who have been starving for this type of content. It was a sector that was largely ignored. Do you think that Football America is right now, just where it is right now, presently, is it enough to satisfy that hunger from that fan base that's growing, that is very educated with the sport, that want more, that they are consistently consuming bilingual content, international content? Is it enough for them?
Not yet. No, not enough. And it shows you how much more of that fire can be stoked, how much more of that net can be cast. It's crazy, man, because in my world, my little bubble, I'm Mexican-American. There were decades ago, 30 years ago, maybe 30 plus, José Ramón Fernández, Los Protagonistas. And imagine this, Football America starts this show. And with this show, there are little content creators who mimic and fall in love and replicate what we are doing and want to follow in our footsteps. And it's like a school of thought. It's like a new wave of content creators coming from it. And now, off into the sunset, maybe Sally and I later on down the road are still working here or working elsewhere or what the case may be. But all those guys who grew up watching us are like the guys today. Well, when you turn on your TV at ESPN Deportes, on Fox, on TUDN, all those guys who grew up thinking, wow, look at this. Look how they're doing it. Look how different it is. They're paying homage to those guys. They're the it guys today. The David Feitelsons, Andre Marin, you know, the Martinolis, these guys in our little world. So I see the parallels here. I see what we're doing and I see how cool it is to get this very sophisticated fan base. And people do not give our fan base enough credit. And when I say our, I don't mean U.S. men's national team. I don't mean Mexico. I mean the American fan, the American viewer through his lens, who may have a Liga MX team, who may have an MLS team, who may not care about Major League Soccer, but loves the U.S. men's national team, who has a Liga MX team, but also watches a Premier League team because of Raul Jimenez, you know. It is so complex today. And I think we're just scratching the surface with it. And I don't think we do enough. It's impossible. Right. We're 2 days a week and we are not a recorded show. We are a live studio. And within that live studio, we go an hour 15. Felipe, you've done this now, editorial, now with this pod. Like, imagine talking for an hour 15 straight, nonstop. And you have to be with it. You have to know what you're talking about because your fan base expects it. And they will tear you apart if you're wrong. They will tear you apart if they feel you're not giving it the justice it deserves. So it is a lot. But to answer your question, no, I don't think we've done enough to suffice that hunger yet.
Let me ask you about the tone, because that was a big part of the story that I wrote. And you know, it's you and Sebastian Salazar talk about it. You have different personalities, unique takes, but together it's like a very unique recipe as well. But the tone of the show, and you said in the story, like, we're not trying to hot take our way to ratings, but there is a distinct tone that is very culturally appropriate. Like, we come from watching, you know, shows in Spanish for our entire lives where it's just like a panel of guys, men and women, just dunking on or criticizing or being giving credit where credit is due. It's very common in American sports, but why was it so needed for soccer? Why was that something that was missing in this space?
Still missing a lot, because we're only one show, two guys trying to do this, right? You turn on your TV, if it is on TV, and that's one of the, you know, the things that people complain about when it comes to how the sport is covered in this country, is we're very white gloves on. We're very like, hey, you go, I go. Hey, no, don't raise your voice. Like, what's going on? And I don't know what it was like in your house, but if you come to the holidays in my house, like, somebody's voice is going to be raised. You know, I remember bringing girls over to the house a holiday or whatever the case may be, or friends and they're of, you know, not Latin American descent. And it's like, whoa, why are they yelling at you? Like, what's going on? Just the way we talk, yeah. You know, it tends to happen. The game is covered differently. It's consumed differently, I should say, in the rest of the world, not just in Latin America. Look at the English press. Now, you can say, well, that's not necessarily a healthy way, or that's not necessarily a way that I'd like to consume. That's fine. But it doesn't mean that other people don't consume it that way. It doesn't mean they don't treat it as seriously as anything else in their life. That's something, that tone that you talk about, that I think is very important for us. People were angry after 2018.
Yeah,
people were angry after the U.S. men's national team didn't qualify. But angry in a way where they didn't want to be fooled anymore. And I say fooled in a way, in a respectful way. There was a way of doing things within the Federation that today's generation doesn't want to allow to fly or wants to question. Okay, but tell me why. We are a representation of that. We love this game. We consume this game in very many different ways. But the way we communicate it to our fans is a way that's natural to us.
So I think tone is interesting. The evolution of the show is really interesting. How I remember before, like a lot of other executives I've talked to, different networks and just hosts, it's like, you know, you're launching a show during a pandemic. You can't do everything that you're trying to do. You're virtual. You're in one part of the country. Seba's in the other part of the country. Now we're at a place where you're back in the studio. You're traveling. You're on site. So with those boxes being checked, what is next for the show? Like, what is a short-term goal for Fútbol Américas?
Short-term goal would be to make it, and I think that is the plan, is 3 days a week. Give the consumer more of what they're looking for. And my personal short-term goal would be anything that is culturally relevant for us, anything that makes sense for us, to be that bridge. So if you're watching a League's Cup, Sebi and I, Fútbol Américas, will be there to bridge that for you. Whether it's linear, whether it's on Plus, whatever the case may be, we will be there. Campeones Cup, we will be there. MLS Cup, Liga MX Finals, like things that are appropriate. USA, Mexico, and the Azteca. You know, whether we have rights or not, we will take that on, because we've taken that on. People don't realize sometimes, and I have friends and family who are like, oh, are you going to be at this game? You're like, no, we don't have rights to that. You are limited to your rights. Well, we don't care about that. We want to compete with anybody else. We don't have rights for the World Cup.
Right.
You know, that means we can't show video footage of what's going on in the World Cup. We are still going to be in Qatar, and we are going to compete with Fox for your eyeballs, for that viewership. You know, we understand what we bring to the table. We understand what the fan base expects out of us, and we want to be there. We want to be bigger than we are, in a sense that people still, for as niche as we are, haven't discovered a lot of us yet. And I say that because I hear this all the time. I run into people at events here in LA, or when I travel and cover other events, and it's like, hey, I love listening to you. Hey, I love your YouTube content. Hey, I love your social, and then it's like, hey, I love the show. It's always about the show, but it's how they consume it. So they listen to it. They watch it on YouTube. They see it through our social channels, whether mine or Sebi's, and then they'll watch it on Plus. But it's the way they consume it that really interests me. There's still a large crowd that hasn't been tapped into yet that I think we can.
I want to say one more thing before we transition, but I remember at the end of that story, Seba had a really good quote that it's, you know, this isn't a show for Mexicans. It's a show by Mexican Americans for football fans. And to be clear, Football America, as you guys cover the European game, NWSL, women's national team, obviously Mexico and the US, anything that is really hovering above Mexico or US players. And so it's there's something for everybody, but you're still calling it niche. Like,
yeah.
How do you make it mainstream then?
I call it niche because if we compare it, I work at ESPN. Okay. So if we compare it to what the First mothership. Take does. Yeah. But if we compare it to what First Take does, for example, that's not niche. They do NFL, they do NBA. They do primetime sports here in the country. Soccer is a huge sport around the world. It's a huge sport in the country, just not in English.
Yep.
We're trying to make it that way. Liga MX is an insane juggernaut in this country in Spanish. But those first, second, third, fourth generation kids who are just like me and you, Felipe, also consume a lot of other things in English. Why can't they consume it, their sport, their way in English? And all those Liga MX fans, some of them are U.S. men's national team fans. A large portion, I would say, because the U.S. men's national team draws well in Spanish.
Sure does.
So I'd like for us to be that bridge. And that's why I say it's niche, because, and I heard John Leguizamo have this quote. He was talking about how he's big on representation in his world, the acting world, Hollywood. Representation, it matters, and it truly does. And things that he's heard in his world, I've heard here. Oh, that didn't work. We tried that.
Yeah.
You know, we tried a Hispanic leading man. Oh, we tried covering the Mexican national team in English. It didn't work. And he said, quite frankly, that's BS. And he said, these shows, these leading men and women should be allowed to fail over and over and over again, the same way that anybody else has been allowed to fail over and over and over again until they get it right. Because that's what everybody else does. We will continue to fail until we get it right in this world. But it's true. You can't just discard because you did something in the past 10 years ago and it didn't work. Well, they just won't watch it. They just won't consume it. No, you've got to keep evolving. You've got to find a way. And I've been pleasantly surprised with comments that I get. And every medium is different. YouTube, Twitter, Face, TikTok, which is insanely young.
Yeah.
Kids who comment like, wow, this is crazy. Like, where is this show? Where can I watch this show? Like, you know, who argue with me? And they're young kids and maybe third, fourth generation Hispanics who, you know, Spanish is what they consume, even though they don't necessarily participate in the interaction of Spanish language, meaning they don't speak it too well.
Right.
So
the other side of the coin. They're looking for that other side.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's something to me that I think is super relevant in my world, and I think we could still do better with.
Great stuff. I mean, listen, Football America's, I think I don't know if I'm going to agree that it's niche. I think only because you're just getting started, though.
Well, I'm thinking big. We are thinking big.
Yeah.
In our world, this is what we do. So this isn't niche. This is our world.
Exactly.
But when we are selling a show to ESPN, there's a reason there were doors shut to us. You know, this is a project that last World Cup we tried getting off the ground. They sent us to Russia to cover the Mexican national team in English, you know, 7-9. So we've been trying to get this off the ground for some time. And the good people who work on this show you go through our production meeting, you have Anglo-Americans, you have people in Mexico, literally in Mexico. Yesterday we were doing a production meeting and one of our researchers had to leave because there's like an actual earthquake happening right now. So we've got Mexican-Americans, we got Anglo-Americans, we've got people who are from Missouri, we've got people who are born here in LA, we got people who are in San Diego. Like, you look at our production group and they are insanely talented, because I would put up a product, and I'm not talking about like what Seb and I say, I'm talking about the graphics you see, I'm talking about the content behind it, the way it's cut up against anybody in this company, and we are the world leader in sport.
I hear you. It's good stuff, and there's a lot going on in those shows. It's not easy ever. You can tell that there's a lot of people behind the scenes doing a lot of great work, so congratulations to them. Football Americas, obviously, hey, let's see if it goes 3 times a week, but you can catch it on ESPN Plus on any time. You don't have to watch it live. It's on demand. Right. I do that a lot. When I miss it, I watch it. Herc, let's get to the U.S. We're going to start with the U.S. before we get to Mexico. They're currently both in their September camps. This is one of the biggest windows before the World Cup. We're 2 months away. Both Greg Berhalter and Tata Martino have they're probably 90% close to choosing their squads. I was told a couple weeks ago via source that Tata Martino basically has his 30 players picked. He's already talked to the 4 players that won't go, that are going to be reserves in case of injury. So like, it's set. Like, this is a time for some players to like make an early move, etc. But let's start with the U.S. What are your biggest concerns right now? Because I have several. Like, starting with the young striker pool, that's one. It's like deer in headlights is a real possibility for that group once they get to the World Cup. And I'm concerned about the back line getting exposed. What is your biggest concern right now for the U.S.?
There are a few. Biggest concern would certainly have to be the 9 position. Because for as in form as certain players are, I don't think many fans feel comfortable in saying that is our 9. That's the guy. There's still a lot of debate, a lot of divide in that sector. I don't know if Greg Berhalter knows the group of 9s he is taking. That is the biggest area of concern for me. Absolutely. Because for as young and dynamic as this group is, that 9 and the function of the 9, at least in Greg Berhalter's 9, is very important to not just putting the ball in the back of the net, but more how that player makes other players around him react. The Pulisics of the world, the Gio Reynas of the world, the Brendan Aaronsons of the world. So that on surface level is probably the most concerning. But there's a huge part of me that is really concerned with health. This is the golden generation, but it should be called the generation made out of glass.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
For as young and talented as they are, over the last 6 months since World Cup qualifying started, you've had Gio Reyna injured, and injured for a long time. Tyler Adams was injured. Zach Steffen injured. Matt Turner got injured, if you can call. I don't know if it was frostbite or what happened there, but extended period of time where he was out. Miles Robinson. Now Anthony Robinson. Eunice is on the mend. You have the center back position, Chris Richards. Cameron Carter-Vickers, who came out of nowhere, who was in that mix, injured as well. Timothy Weah. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And if I had to say one area, it isn't positional at this moment. I mean, you could say the 9, you could say the goalkeeper position, who is it going to be? You could say that back line, what's that going to look like? But it's overall health right now that really worries me with this group. I played this game for 17 years professionally, and I would hear over and over and over again, it's better to be available than good. And that's so true. Wow. I mean, I got an opportunity in sport because Landon Donovan was gone. Yaron Kurofsky was gone. Other forwards in the LA Galaxy pool weren't there, weren't available. And I got thrown into a mix and I never let the position go. And that's how I became a fixture on that Galaxy team that year. And it's the truth. And this is a recurring theme, not only with the U.S. men's national team, but we're seeing with the Mexican national team. You have to be available. That has to be your most important trait as a professional athlete. You have to be available, one. And that's been something that's eluded a lot of this talent pool. Generation, golden generation, sure, but glass generation as well. For as young and talented as they are, I mean, knock on wood, you know, you got to be there at this World Cup if you want to perform.
Man, and when you call any team's group of player golden generation, I think that just brings with it, it's not even pressure. There's pressure on everyone, whether you're a golden generation or not, but the expectations are higher. I think the failure is stronger, and it's a lot worse if you're given that title. And Greg Berhalter has been the coach who's been given the keys to this generation. You know, the credit that I give Berhalter is his insistence, or perhaps like just deciding like, hey, we're going young. These are my guys. I'm going to try a bunch of dudes over the summer during Gold Cup and Nations League, which was the complete opposite of what Tata Martino did. But I guess my question to you with Berhalter, yes, I know the World Cup is the big test, but has he met expectations? Has he exceeded expectations? What do you think right now for Greg?
There are certain things that he has met expectations and certain things he's exceeded expectations in. He's met expectations in qualifying this team because of what had happened. Don't let anybody fool you. That was an important milestone, important goal for this team. Don't say, hey, that's the bare minimum. No, you saw what could happen. 2018 was a reflection of that if you don't do things the correct way. So he met that expectation. The expectation of going with the young guys wasn't on my table. But it was on him, on his, I should say, and he managed that. It's not easy to push veterans aside, guys like Jozy Altidore, guys like Michael Bradley. He pushed those guys aside. Brad Guzan, who could have been in line to be a starting goalkeeper. I mean, think about when he took this team. You say 4 years ago, 3 years ago, that was not a thought on many people's mind. Like, he's just going to push all these veteran guys out.
Absolutely.
He's going to ease certain guys in. He just pushed everybody out. he did it in a way where he entrusted this new generation of being responsible and policing themselves, if you will, and being like the men, you know, and that was important in itself, a big decision that paid off for him. Now he's going to have the youngest team at the World Cup. And now this team's going to have this experience in 2022 in Qatar of being the youngest team and those battles they will go into, that experience they will garner, maybe even surprise a few people. But all these guys are going to be in their mid-20s come 2026 when the World Cup is in their house. So he's exceeded expectations in a few things like that. And also recruitment. I could have never in a million years imagined he would have done so well with recruitment. I tip my hat to him, the way he's handled the player pool in that aspect. From Yunus Musa, Sergiño Dest to the Mexican-Americans. If you talk to guys like Julian Araujo, they will say nothing but good things about Greg Berhalter and the way he handled things. And if you look at the way maybe the Mexican Federation has handled things, there are a few out there. There are a few out there who would say it's predatory caps. You know, just like cap them, get them, and then we'll figure it out. Greg Berhalter has not been about that. So, you know, I commend him on that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that Mexico, they really wanted Ricardo Pepi. Like, it wasn't just like, hey, we're going to try to take him from the U.S. Like, they saw a future number nine in Ricardo Pepi. And it's interesting where he is now, Ricardo, after not scoring a lot of goals. Now he's sort of on the bubble, but I think he's going to be in Qatar. But I agree. I think Berhalter, and I think he plays the game also. Like, he's very strategic in what he says and how he says it, with the Alejandro Sendejas fiasco, if you will. You know, when he's asked about him, he's like, yeah, we talked to him. We're keeping tabs on him. Like, just like putting pressure on the rival, basically. It's like, we are doing this. If you don't make the move, we will. And he has the leverage because Zendejas is a U.S. soccer player at this point. But I feel like Berhalter is always out there playing the game. And I think that's a big part of the recruitment battle that you bring up.
Yeah. We had Greg Berhalter in studio. And did not go the way that I thought it would have gone. I thought I was going to get a Greg Berhalter, a little bit more defensive, a little bit more in my face. Like, hey, I've heard what you've been saying. You know, I heard you called us off. You know, I hear this. I hear that. I watch this. I watch that. And I know they watch this. They watch that. I know they hear this. They hear that. And to his credit, he wasn't. I pressed him. I was 2 feet away from him, would ask him a straight question. He'd give me an answer. And if I didn't think it was a straight answer, I'd press him again until he finally did give me an answer. But to his credit, he stood there, faced the music, and answered everything in his way. I don't agree with a lot of things Greg Berhalter has done.
Like what? Well,
for example, you just spoke about Sendejas, right? He at times contradicts himself. Sendejas, we are keeping tabs on him. We've been in communication. But Brandon Vasquez, well, it's kind of far late in the game to bring him in. He's not had a body of work with us.
But see, you're
so
right.
So which is it?
But that's Berhalter playing the game. That's him poking the rival, in my opinion. I totally agree with you.
But the fan base is like, wait a second. I had this argument on air yesterday with Seb about Jordan Pefok. Oh, well, we didn't bring Jordan in because we know what we can do. We know what we get from Jordan. We've seen what he can do. We're going to bring somebody in and see what we can do, get from them, what we see from them. And Seb's like, hey, don't worry. This to me tells me he's a lock. Hmm. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, whoa, my spidey senses are tingling. I saw this same gesture, same attitude, same exact verbiage with John Brooks. Where is he? I don't need to see what John Brooks can do. I know what he can do. I need to see what these guys can do.
Exactly.
Where is he? He's on the outside looking in. John Brooks is not going to the World Cup today. So there are a few things where he contradicts himself. And to a few people, it's like, well, every coach has his guys. Fine. Luis Enrique just did a press conference where he pretty much laughed in the press's face and said, he's not there because I want this guy. And that's how it is, because I know what this guy gives me and he knows what we do. And that's how it is. You know, so stop asking, clear as water. That's fine. Every coach has that, has his guys. But say it. Don't say this is how it is because of this, A. And then in the same breath, ask me about another player and same situation. Oh, but here you go, B. The fan today is smart enough to know you are bullshitting them. They're smart enough to know that's not the case. And you could be politic and you could be playing the game, but it's not across the board. It doesn't apply to everybody. And if every case is different, is singular, then say it. In this specific case, this is what it is. But when you say something like, I know what I get from him, that means you know what you get from everybody who's been in camp, right?
Yeah.
And that means the same rules apply to everybody who's under your stable.
I mean, and what we don't know, it's like what I imagine Tata Martino has already done. Like, if you don't take a certain player to this very important September camp, has there been a conversation already between this coach and the player saying, hey, as long as you don't tear your ACL or get an ankle injury, you're going, okay? But we don't know if that conversation has taken place. And as a player, you want to be there. You want to be there no matter what. You know, you're not in camp and some guy scores 3 goals in the friendly. Now you're making the coach really think about that position. So, yeah, it's
you know, dangerous. It is.
Like, he puts himself in a tough spot.
Yeah, why would you do that? And I'm not talking about Greg Berhalter, but like Tata Martino, we had Juan Carlos Osorio on yesterday. And like, Juan Carlos, what would you do with these guys who are on the bubble? You know, like, it's so close. Henry Martin, goal scorer right now. But Rogelio Funes Mori is a guy of his confidence, you know, so to speak, for Tata Martino. Not so to speak, he is. He said, man, I would wait to the very last week, very last moment to make that decision and go with the hotter hand. So why would you limit yourself right now and say, hey, you're going as long as you don't get injured? Like, it's a – theoretically, it's a 20-day tournament, right?
Yeah.
Think about it. Like, you got to go with whoever gets you to that second round. You got to go with what you think, who you think can help you in that very moment, because there are very good footballers that I've played with, that these coaches have dealt with, who for whatever reason – come tournament time or pre-tournament time are in great shape, great form. And you're like, I have to have them there. But the rest of the year, you're like, where has this been?
Yeah.
And it's a game of cat and mouse where you want to get the best players, guys who have taken you there and reward them. But you also want this national team because they represent a country to do well in this said tournament. So you got to go who you think in that exact moment in time can help you do that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
All right, let's go to Mexico. Mexico also has plenty of concerns, but I want to ask you something. So 2013, Mexico needs a Graham Zusi goal to get to the World Cup. It's like they were out. They were not going to Brazil. But, you know, now we fast forward to 2022 and it's like the sky's falling. They qualified. They qualified above the United States. Yes, I know. We know what happened, but they still qualified above the United States. They were there. They were tied basically with Canada, the upstarts. Why is the sky falling in Mexico? Why is the crisis and polémica surrounding this team right now? And is it a concern for you? It's a concern for Tata. He's been open about it lately that he's concerned for his players. So
let me start with what's your qualifying, opinion? And then I'll go bigger picture. World Cup qualifying, they were above the United States men's national team, which is not something to brag about for Mexico. They feel like they are superior than the U.S. men's national team, superior than Canada. They feel like they are los reyes de CONCACAF.
Yeah.
That's the way they feel in their football in general. But they really were los reyes de Centroamérica, if you think about it. Oof. Because they played against Canada home and away and the United States men's national team home and away and Costa Rica home and away. You know how many wins they got in those six?
Not many.
One.
Yeah.
That was the bad version of Costa Rica before they went on the run.
Right.
Tied in the Azteca versus Costa Rica. Tied in the Azteca versus Canada. Tied in the Azteca versus the U.S. men's national team. Lost in Canada. Lost in Cincinnati. They were los reyes de Centroamérica. They qualified because of what they did versus Central American opposition. That is one. Two, why is the sky falling? Because when you look at the collective moment of Mexican football, and it started about 18 months ago, it started about, Campeones Cup, Columbus versus Cruz Azul, they lose. The CONCACAF Nations League final versus the United States men's national team, I thought they were clearly better than the U.S.
They were, yeah. They should have won.
They lost. Gold Cup final in Las Vegas versus a U.S. men's national team C team. Yes. Think about the players who are on that team.
There are guys that are nowhere near the team right now.
Matthew Hoppe.
Hoppe was there.
Yeah, yeah. Giochini, excuse me, was in Orlando. Those type of kids. Chris Pines was a center back. You know,
goodness.
So you think of the names who were on this list, they beat that Mexico team, World Cup qualifying. Okay. And then you're going to go to the U20s don't qualify for the U20 Olympics. I'm sorry, for the Olympic Games and the U20 World Cup. The women host the CONCACAF W tournament in Mexico don't score one single goal. As the host.
As host.
As host. the Seattle Sounders beating Pumas for the CONCACAF Champions League.
Not a great Pumas side, though. Not a great Pumas side.
The Seattle team might not make the final, might not make postseason for the first time in their history.
Yeah, I mean.
And now you have Campeones Cup again. It's just, as a collective, the worst footballing moment in Mexico's history.
Oof. This is why the domino effect. The domino is just like one after another, basically. So whose fault is it? I mean, it's a big picture problem, but like, let's put Tata Martino front and center. He's hired to change things. He's hired to make serious change within the federation, to get a seat at the table with the owners, los dueños, the most powerful people in Mexican football. This is in 2019. I remember this being very well reported, that that was part of the goal, to get him in there to help change things internally. His gravitas and his professionalism was a welcome change. I was told by a source that, like, hey, they're really happy with Tata because he's not controversial. He's not out there like El Piojo or anyone else being, you know, just like grabbing headlines with quotes or something off the field. But how do you think he's going to be remembered? How will Tata Martino be remembered, knowing that, yes, the World Cup is coming, and that's the only reason truly why he was brought in, but all these other things that haven't gone his way, the losses to the U.S., how will Tata Martino be remembered in Mexico?
That's up in the air. And the reason I say this is because Mexican football has had this, the sky is falling moment, literally every World Cup besides the 2018 World Cup with Juan Carlos Osorio.
Yeah.
I'm heading into the World Cup.
That's a cultural problem there, man.
It
it's
is.
Like,
and it's such is life that Tata Martino came out and said he feels like public enemy number one.
Yeah.
They demand more out of the head coach of the Mexican national team than they do their politicians in Mexico, their local government. And that's just a reality. Yep. You know, but that will all depend, that perception of him, on how well or not they do in the World Cup in Qatar. If they get out and go to the fifth game, el quinto partido, out of that group, I could easily see them trying to extend Tata Martino. Whether Tata Martino wants that or not, that's a different story.
Don't think so, but
exactly. and we can get into that later, but you can see that in his call-ups, right? Exactly. But the Mexican fan base, los ejecutivos, the directiva, the men and women who run the Mexican Federation, all that will depend, that perception, on how they do in this World Cup.
Yeah.
And it's like that every 4 years. Every 4 years. I mean, there are people who wanted Juan Carlos Osorio out after the Chile game when he lost 7-0. And who hated him because of that. And who called him Juan Cambios Osorio. You know, he makes too many changes and all these different things. Great. But when they beat Germany in the opening game, they were talking about already extending them another 4 years. So how they perform in Qatar will directly affect the perception of the fan base and the brass in Mexican football.
So one more question about Mexico before we get to the spot kick. You know, you mentioned his Tata Martino's quote about, he was asked, like, do you consider yourself an enemy to the people? And then he interrupted the reporter. I was there in person. It was very lighthearted, but still, he, you know, actually, like, with a slight laugh, he's like, no, like, I'm public enemy number one.
Right.
But during that week in Atlanta, you know, with a meaningless friendly, really, against Paraguay, it's like where all this blew up, like the Zendejas extortionist quote blew up, the public enemy number one quote came out. He was more transparent and open than I've ever seen him in the 4 years.
He was angry.
He's telling the media, like, if this is not going to go well for the players, if we continue with this pessimistic environment, were you were surprised by it, but what does that tell you about where he is in his tenure?
So a little context, he was very surprised and upset that Gerardo Torrado was let go of his position. Essentially, Gerardo Torrado was there as one of the guys who was his confidant. Was one of the guys who he really entrusted a lot of his decisions with. He had open dialogue, open communication with, and was very surprised that he was one of the last guys to find out, right? It was a decision made by the brass. And then when it was made is when Tata Martino found out. So it's not something that went over well with them.
Right.
So this, in my eyes, is a is him not unfolding, not blowing up, but playing his hand, showing how upset he is at the way things are going. And in a way, I think almost pointing the finger like, you are creating this. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's a you are creating this to the Mexican press, because they are who they are.
Yeah,
that's I think it's the brass. Like, this is what you are doing. This is what you are creating.
Yeah, I was told that when he during that week when he came out and said that he was very upset, that he thought it was unfair that Torralo was fired without him knowing, it didn't go over well within the Federation, those comments from Tata Martino. And that had never happened before. Like, his comments, it was always very contained. And to your point about Torralo, like, when everyone is asking John De Luisa, are you keeping Tata Martino or are you firing Tata Martino? Torralo is on the record saying, we want him to stay. We hope he stays after the World Cup. And so there you could see that chemistry between that group. Yeah. You know, he called it a seismic moment for Mexican football. Tata did over that week, saying that all those changes led to where we are today.
And going back to that sky is falling. I mean, it literally took a U-20 team in a youth tournament not to make it to that U-20 World Cup, which eliminated him from Olympic contention. For Gerardo Torrado, who was a director of youth of all national teams in Mexican football, to be fired, to be let go.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything at the senior level. So you could imagine how that went over with Tata Martino, especially being one of the last ones to find out. It wasn't like, hey, Tata, how do you feel about this? What do you think? And despite the input, he was let go. He was just let go. And then Tata Martino found out.
Right. Yeah, and then Gianluisa told everyone, oh, Tata's on board. Tata's on board with the changes.
Yeah.
And then when Tata gets in front of the mic, he's like, I don't think so. Last question, because you mentioned the U-20 team, the women not making the Olympics, both teams not making the Olympics or the World Cup at that youth level. And then the firings happen. You know, what was widely reported in Mexico is like, yeah, like the guys that are making the decisions are the ones that are losing the money. Like, we don't have... there's no sponsorships. There's no TV deals now happening for the Olympic Games or the Youth World Cups. Is that accurate? Is that really where that's going?
No. I mean, you will lose, right? I mean, you don't go to the Olympics, you're not going to get those eyeballs. Those television networks are going to lose that money. Any U-20, U-23, U-17 national team tournament, it's a big opportunity for Mexico, because they are world powers at those levels, or they have been, at least until present time. It's an opportunity for more money to come in. But Mexico is just such a juggernaut when it comes to sponsorships, when it comes to people interested in Mexico, in the States, that I can't imagine it's taken that much of a hit. But you will lose money. I don't know how much based off of two youth tournaments, but I can't imagine it's enough to really cause a dent, like if they missed a World Cup.
Sure. Okay. Last question before we get to the spot kick. You mentioned Jozy Altidore as one of those veterans that was sort of pushed out, you know, along with Michael Bradley, a bunch of guys that just weren't part of the failed attempt to make that World Cup in 2018. Jozy's in Mexico. You know, he's at Puebla, your former club. I spoke with him. He mentioned you. He said he spoke to you and Beasley, DeMarcus Beasley, before he went over there. What is your take right now on how it's going for him? You know, I don't think he was meant to score 15 goals in Puebla, but just removing himself from MLS, going to Liga MX, have you spoken to him? And what has been the takeaway perhaps in Mexico on Jozy?
Yeah, I think Josie's been a pleasant surprise for Puebla. Unfortunately for Jozy at this time, Martin Barragan, the guy playing in front of him, he's having like a career year, like of his life. 8 goals right now for a team like Puebla. And the way Puebla plays, I firmly believe is Josie's that out-and-out striker, and getting those minutes, he's going to score goals. They're going to put him on a platter. They're going to put him in positions in front of the goal. Josie's going to get hot. Unfortunately, right now, he's got a player who is hot. So it's very difficult for them to make that move. Larcamón's a very intelligent coach. He wouldn't have brought Josie on if he didn't think he could help him. That's a reality. But Jozy Altidore is a very respected figure within Mexican football right now. Like they know exactly what they will get out of Jozy. So I think things are going well for him. Not well enough where people are going to scream and yell and say, hey, you got to get this guy on the national team.
No, is it crazy to think that he I mean, if I say, hey, you never know what happens in November, what if he gets hot in Liguilla? Is he too far removed?
It's not that he's too far removed, because you talk about body of work, like that's a body of work. And Greg Berhalter had mentioned on our show, like Jozy Altidore, like nobody's touching Jozy Altidore, his career on the U.S. men's national team. But you've got Josh Sargent scoring goals right now. You know, Ricardo Pepi scored finally, and Ricardo Pepi gets hot. Evidence of that is his appearance. He has an assist, his first appearance, second appearance, first start. He has a goal, you know, like the kid's going to get hot. And he has a body of work with Greg Berhalter. Jesus Ferreira, for as much as fans give him, I mean, he's in the form of his career,
yeah.
You know, and he's a player that understands the system. And Nico Estevez at FC Dallas, the head coach, operates in the very exact same system as Greg Berhalter. And he's getting the best of him. So he will be there. You've got guys like Brandon Vasquez who are just screaming at the top of their lungs, just give me a look, give me a look in his play. Even when he's not scoring goals, he's just such an effective forward, effective body for FC Cincinnati. And then you have Jordan Pefok, for whatever reason, can't get a sniff. I mean, the only guy in the whole player pool who's never gone cold hasn't been a consistent call-up for Greg Berhalter.
He went cold at the Azteca. He went cold that night.
He went
night.
Cold for one play. Name me one striker that's never missed a shot.
Oh, good.
You know?
That doesn't exist.
The best players in the world have missed goals, have missed bonehead plays like that. Yes, the best in the world. One of the best in Major League Soccer history, the best in Major League Soccer history, not my opinion, just stats, Chris Wondolowski is still defined today by a goal he didn't score against Belgium.
Yeah.
So this is what it's like for strikers. We talk about goalkeepers, how if they make a mistake, they're usually the ones that cost their team. Well, what strikers, sometimes you make a mistake, it's the one that people remember you for. But yeah, this guy literally became the very first U.S. men's national team eligible forward to win a goal scoring title in Europe. Like, that just doesn't happen. And you're like, well, it's a Swiss league. Guess what? He's tearing up in the Bundesliga right now. You know, so because of this player pool that we have right now, the U.S. men's national team, I find it difficult for Jozy. Yeah. Even if he did get hot. But Josie's a special player. And when it's all said and done, he's a Hall of Famer. And if the U.S. men's national team didn't fail to qualify in 2018, you have 2018, 2019, who knows what 20 looks like because it's pandemic year, 21, where Josie's still very firmly in those plans with the U.S. men's national team, with whatever coach you have out there. And he, in my mind, would have been the all-time leading goal scorer in the U.S. men's national team because of the competition you face in CONCACAF and the tournaments you have like Gold Cups and et cetera, friendlies, whatever the case may be. He would have surpassed Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey. It would have been, but it didn't happen like that. You know, it was a failed attempt. And Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley are the two people unfairly in my eyes that took the heat, and they are two of the greatest U.S. men's national team players to ever play the game. And that's just not my opinion. Look at the numbers. I've played with them. They were my teammates. I know them as people. I know what they can offer on the field, but they will forever be marked because of that. And it's unfair.
Yeah. That's international football. And perhaps what Berhalter has been able to do and perhaps giving the license to say, okay, I'm starting over, comes from not making the World Cup in 2018.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's the
reality.
Yeah, that's the key that you're given. It's the golden key. Like, fine, go, start over.
That's the only way you can have a clean slate and offer it to and literally say, hey, I'm going with these guys, all young guys, is if you say, well, look, we're coming off of this fracaso, this failure. I need to do something drastic.
All right. Hercules Gomez, excellent stuff. We're going to get the spot kick now. Five questions.
All right.
Questions. You approach it like a PK. You go left, you go right, Panenka, but don't waffle. Right. Don't waffle. Five questions. The first one for Hercules Gomez with the spot kick. El Tri's next head coach will be Mexican. Yes or no?
No.
No. Foreign again.
Yeah. Would you like me to elaborate?
Please.
who? What Mexican coach can offer you that next level, that opportunity to transcender, to transcend, to become better than El Quinto Partido right now? And the reality is there is no coach right now, Mexican coach, that could offer that. You have Jimmy Lozano, who, by the way, was a Houston candidate in Houston, interviewed him, and went the other way. Still very green, not national team experienced yet, not to that caliber. You have Miguel Herrera. Are you going to that well again?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Vasco Aguirre, I mean, been there, done that. You know, he's going to be 70 soon. So where will you go? Like, who are these Mexican coaches you speak of?
Yeah, and there's some good foreign coaches in Liga MX, some really good ones that are doing
Larcamon,
well.
Yeah, Larcamon is one of them. Yeah, Amada is a very good candidate. Even then, it's about the player pool. Like,
yeah,
those coaches demand a lot physically out of those players.
Mm-hmm. All right, spot kick number two, Marcelo Flores, hype or promise?
Promise.
Yeah.
You don't get to Arsenal and have that type of performance, because he was a U23 player, but he was like 17 years old scoring for the U23s, you know, and not scoring just once or every once in a while, consistently. A lot of talent. So it's promise. But when he gets on the Mexican national team, you can understand the hype. There are only a handful of players that have ever debuted with the Mexican national team before first team minutes at their club. And I'm talking about the Dos Santos brothers, Gio,
yep,
and Jonah. And say what you will about Gio, he's had one of the top five Mexican national team careers, if you look at what he's done for the Mexican national team. And Carlos Vela. Like, those are the only players alongside Flores, Marcelo Flores, who can say that they've done that. So there's definitely promise there.
All right. Spot kick number three. Does Mexico shut out Lewandowski on November 22nd? It's been done.
No.
No?
I don't think Mexico shuts out Lewandowski. They could win, but I don't think they shut him down. No.
He gets his goal?
I think he gets his goal. I think it's going to be a pretty open game. I think they're in for a definite fight, and everything hinges in that first game for Mexico. Qualification hinges in that first game.
It's everything. I mean, I've talked to people that said, if they beat Poland, they're in. Like, they can manage the group after that. They're moving through after that.
I wholeheartedly agree.
All right, spot kick number four. Will Chicharito Hernandez play for Mexico again?
No.
No.
He will not.
Yeah?
Not
even post-Qatar, maybe, you know, bring him back, give him the game, the send-off?
The only player that I've seen get that send-off is Cuauhtémoc Blanco in my lifetime.
Wow.
That's the only player I've seen get that send-off. And Chicharito's kind of like Canelo right now. And Cuauhtémoc Blanco is like Julio Cesar Chavez.
Hmm.
You know, Julio Cesar has the people's love. Julio Cesar Chavez is the people's champion. Cuauhtémoc is the people's champion. Right now, there is no more polemic figure in all of Mexican football than Chicharito Hernandez.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately for him, I think that's past him.
Yeah, when you're a polarizing figure, it can work against you, honestly. Okay, number five, this is the final spot kick. I saved the best one for last. The best Latino to play for the U.S. men's national team is?
Whoo! Claudio Reyna, Tab Ramos. I would have to go with Claudio Reyna. Claudio special.
Wow. Yeah,
Tab was a good player,
man. Classy.
Tab was really classy, but Claudio's something else. Like, Claudio to me is in that top five of U.S. men's national team players, you know?
What made him special?
He was good on the ball. He was classy. He played in Europe. I mean, like, one of the saddest moments for me was watching Claudio Reyna in the 2006 World Cup lose the ball against Ghana. Literally, like, lose the ball, get hurt simultaneously in the same play because of what Claudio Reyna was, like, growing up, you know? Like, the epitome of class. Like, not only do you have this guy was like, he's a 10 on the ball, pulling the strings. He's also a Latino guy.
Yeah.
You know, like it was, he was a classy player. But if you, it's funny because if you speak to U.S. men's national team players, especially those 94, 98 guys, like they will all tell you tap. From the outside looking in, like Claudio was just a class above a lot of those guys.
Yeah, and Claudio Reyna, like he gets to Manchester City, goes to the Premier League. He's not a 6'5" U.S. striker.
No.
He's
no,
a small playmaker.
Yeah.
You know, and like he got to the highest level. And then obviously the 2002 World Cup, he's like the key player for that team. You move him out, you can play him wherever you want. He could have played in a back three, I think, honestly.
Claudio's a baller. And he and Gio are probably the closest thing we have to U.S. men's national or national team royalty. You see a lot of that in Mexico a lot of times, you know, generations of footballers. I mean, Javier Hernandez, Chicharito Hernandez is third generation footballer, Mexican national team footballer. His grandfather, you know, Mexican national team, his father, Mexican national team. It's Chicharito's. That's the closest thing you have here in the U.S. men's national team are Claudio and Gio.
Hercules Gomez, you crushed it. I don't think you really... You weren't really phased. I thought number five would give you some thought, but you handled it well. I wish
you want to say me. Who do you want me to say?
I mean,
me?
That's why the question's there. You never know.
You should have done it, Liga MX, U.S. men's national player, and then I would have done Beasley.
Too easy. Oh, exactly. You can't forget Bees. You can't forget
honorary Bees. Latino.
Exactly. Herc, man, thank you for coming on. Best of luck with Football Americas. Best of luck this summer. I hope to see you in Qatar. You do great stuff, English and Spanish. What a team with Seba. And always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. So insightful. Thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it, Felipe. I'll see you in Qatar, my man. And keep it up with the podcast. Good work, man. All right.